back in the swing of things.
You say so.
Seems like it's been a while, but yeah. I still got to get the beer barge edited. I started on it, but got everything like ripped in the same file. Now I just have to go through and clean up my shoddy interviewing skills. I listened to some of your interviews. I guess, you know, just the one from Indigo Imp from the, you know, you introduced it like an interviewer would, you know, where I'm like, so here, you know, like your intro was, I'm like, I need to write those down. I mean, cause it's nothing special so much, but it like just added, you know, it was a much better, and then wrapping it up like with Craft Beer Radio and Greg Weiss, you know, it's just like, oh yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it.
The rest of the interview sucked, but
no, the rest of the interview was good too. But you know, that's the thing that caught me. The guy who does the other interviews that uh-huh. I don't know how to introduce an interview, apparently. And after I listened to yours, I'm like, oh yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it.
I don't even remember the interview. I said something along the lines of, we're here with blah, blah, blah on the real.
Yeah, but it just sounded like, you know, a newscaster. You know, it sounded like an interview is supposed to sound. And I'm like, I need to remember that. So I got this interesting can here in front of me. This is the Sly Fox Royal Weiss Ale. It used to be a Royal King. They took the king off the name. But we had a beer exchange at work, beer club, and it was wheat beers this time. And I bought a case of this Royal King, Royal Weiss, which is a Hefeweizen in a can. And five of the cans had popped their seam like this. It wasn't dropped. This is from pressure. Gently feel how stiff this can is on the sides.
Yeah. That is stiff.
So I brought one home with the seam popped like this and one home where the seam was not popped. And I was grabbing the one with the seam not popped out of the six-pack holder, put it in the fridge, and the seam popped while I was touching it. It goes, ping! Like, loud. It scared the shit out of me. Like, I thought the can was going to explode. And then beer started leaking out right here where the seam had popped. This one doesn't look like it leaked at all. But crazy overpressure. No, I think opening it will be okay, because when I opened the other one, it didn't shoot up or anything. We might have a little bit of a gusher here. Let's see. Here's a towel.
Yeah. I would put the towel, yeah, like just on top of it as you're opening it.
Yeah. But I don't expect... I'll put my hand over it, too. So it opens fairly reasonably, except with the seam popped. The punch top can does not...
You need to Twitter that. You need to Twitter a picture of that.
Yeah, I'll put up a picture of this, but let's get this poured. Okay. So the first one, it was crazy overcarbonated, but didn't taste too off. I think there was just a touch of some wild bugs in there, but nothing that would account for the crazy overpressure. So I think there was probably overpressure when they packaged it. But let's see how that thing foams up.
A lot of foam.
Crazy amounts of foam. Almost all foam.
Smells great. Smells banana.
I
clove
think there's
and...
just a small off flavor in there, but really it's not something... It's so small that I don't think it can account for the seams popping.
Well, I mean, this has the yeast in it, so I mean, it's pressurized in can, but then actually...
Yeah, I mean, I've been told it's very difficult to do can conditioning. Like, you would think this might be happening because they were can conditioning, you know, and they over-primed it or something, right? But you can't really do can conditioning because you can't stack the cans until they're pressurized. So you would have to have a single layer of cans in your warm room conditioning. You know, you wouldn't be able to stack them. So unlikely.
Maybe what they did, I mean, because they're... Is there yeast in here? We'll have to see.
Well, we will have to see.
And so the question is, maybe what they did is they pressurized it normally and then hoped that it wouldn't get that much additional pressure.
It still should have been its final gravity. I mean, maybe that's the mistake. I mean, who knows exactly where the mistake is in the packaging of this thing. I'm just going to snap a quick photo. We would have vined it, but, you know, I didn't... want this thing to, actually I tried to vine the first one and it wasn't spectacular, and Heather didn't know how to use vine. I didn't explain you have to hold the screen in, you have to keep touching the screen.
I hope people enjoyed the vine the bits of vine that we did.
Vine's like a new art form, isn't it? You gotta learn how to use it,
you have to learn how to do it right, how to make it into... Because there's no editing, too, so you have to do all the editing kind of
in camera
on the fly. Like I said, it smells good. Yeah, it smells okay. Maybe there's a little plastic in it.
Yeah. Hmm. I drank the other one. I mean, it was fun, good enough to drink. I mean, it was just barely off.
So, yeah, it's been 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since we've done the last show. And because of the Pittsburgh Craft Beer Week, because that was just ridiculous. Lots of stuff happening. Jeff went to more than I did. And
I even took 2 nights off because I drank too much. So there we go, volcano. Let's see how high we can stand the head up before it falls over above the glass.
So what did you think of Pittsburgh Craft Beer Week?
I think that you'll hear a little bit of my thoughts when I publish the beer barge, but I liked it. Year number one, which was last year, it was most of Pittsburgh Craft Beer Week was your run-of-the-mill beer sampling, tasting at a bar or a beer distributor or a grocery store. And I thought it was going to be that way again this year when I looked at the initial schedule. And then as, you know, the week progressed, either there was a bunch of late additions or I had missed them the first time through the schedule. But there was a lot of more worthwhile events, things that the beer geeks, not even the beer geeks, the beer enthusiasts, the people that more, you know, casually like craft beer, right, could go out and do some more things. You know, anyone who is not excited by a wholesaler pouring 3 flagships from a popular brewery, you know, I mean, because a lot of people get beyond that, you know, it's like, oh, I get the taste, you know, beer is X, Y, and Z from brewery, you know, F, you know, not exciting. So, but there's a lot of things. There was a lot of brewery reps. Well, mostly the local breweries had brewery reps in town, but yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff going on. I think there's room to, you know, there's always room to improve, you know, to catch up, you know, or to, you know, try to get closer to what Philly does in Philly Beer Week. But for a second year, I was impressed and satisfied.
I mean, maybe you had, I guess, a different experience than I did. What struck me as strange was that everybody was going crazy over how great the Real Ale Fest was. And it was fun. I'm not saying it wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of good stuff there. But it didn't strike me as different from any other, you know, vaguely specialty tasting that I may have gone on before.
Okay.
There was nothing intrinsically unique about the event itself, particularly since, like I said, I mean, most people there were not brewery reps, they were volunteers pouring the stuff, so it was hard for me to get interviews.
Yeah.
It was too crowded. It was, you know, some people were pouring some interesting stuff, and that was good, but, you know, you expect that at a good beer fest, but so...
It's okay, sorry.
But it was not, there was nothing spectacular about that, you know.
Well, I mean, from our point of view, volunteers pouring the beers really detract from the value of the festival for us. You know, we're there to cover it. We're there to, you know, do the interviews. And, you know, we got a beer barge, which is yet to be posted. Will be soon. You know, I got some interviews from Helltown and New Holland, Red Star Kombucha.
Yep.
Did I talk to Jeff Guidos again? Maybe All Saints. I'm not sure if I talked to him again because I just talked to him at the Brewers Ball. So, I mean, those were good, but there was also a lot of breweries I went to. I went to the Hebrew, and it was just the wholesaler.
Right.
And he didn't... I knew more about their brewery, about Hebrew building a brewery, than he did. You know, so it's like, okay, no point in doing this interview. And, you know, and there was some of that. And then there was some where they were just volunteers, right? Like the people at Anderson Valley. Just... They didn't even work at Vicini. They were just volunteers pouring, so there was like nothing, you know, nothing. They don't know anything about the brewery. They know as much about the beer as I do, if that. So
overall, I mean, we've said before, we've been spoiled by going on to these, you know, the huge events, whether it's Great American Beer Fest or Savor, a bunch of times where you really get to talk to people. And maybe it's just that, you know, I wasn't talking to people who have been to those kind of events. So for them, it was something big and unique that happened in Pittsburgh that is not normal. And yeah, I guess it's not normal to have things like that happen in Pittsburgh. But the event I enjoyed the most was the last one. The flying dog one. Because that felt unique.
Mm-hmm.
There was There was a whole lot of, it was just a different atmosphere to it. Mm-hmm. In addition to the food trucks there, the sort of playful atmosphere that everybody was having.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of interesting, the kind of worthwhile event that a bar can put on. You know, that, I mean, beer dinners are obviously one of them. You know, you can't have all beer dinners. People can't afford to go to all beer dinners. But you have events that are more of a festival type thing like that. And those are, you know, someone like, hey, yeah, I'm going to go down to Huff's and go to this thing because it's not just a brewery tasting. It's not just, you know, that run of the mill type thing. So, yeah, very good point. I'm glad we went to that flying dog. When we first pulled up, it was outside in the rain. I'm like, I'm like, I didn't know you were already there. So I sent you a text like, it's outside. Ugh. And I was still going to give it a go and see what it was like. I wasn't just going to leave right then. But it definitely turned out to be pretty cool.
Yeah, we had a good time, and there's a lot of good interviews from there, including one that we'll talk about at a later date. There's a part of it that we're going to be excising.
And Greg trying to be a smart journalist, and
yeah, basically it was me, but understandably the person, the subject, didn't want to get into that subject, and there wasn't really a reason for me to bring it up. Other than sort of a journalistic thing, but not really a beer thing. So I can understand why it's not.
Yeah.
Something they want to bring
up. Yeah. Well,
he's not talking to Newsweek, right? I
mean, there's that. It was later in the afternoon. So all three of us had beers in us, you know, like in hindsight, there's probably a better way you could have brought up the subject. You know, the wholesaler has a name that has an unfortunate historical context. And Greg tried to ask him about that, and he just wasn't ready to answer it, and he wasn't comfortable with talking about it, so.
All right, so I guess we'll bring it up.
Well, yeah, you can bring it up, sure.
Yeah, so it was one of the wholesalers in the area is, what's the first?
Frank.
Frank Fuhrer, wholesaler. Now, that struck me slightly weird because I remember walking into the Flying Dog bus and seeing all the stuff on, you know, these chalkboards, and one of the first I saw the wall was Fuhrer, and I didn't know it was Frank Fuhrer distributing. I didn't know of that. Who knows about the distributors in their area? I know of Vicini's, but I didn't know. I never heard of Frank Fuhrer. So, you know, I heard that, and then we got to talk to the guy, and we got into it, and we were talking about other things, and just, you know. It was in the back of my mind, so I thought I would bring it up. But I think the way I asked was, you know, you guys do a lot of good for the community and stuff, and you keep trying to expand your market. Does the name Fuhrer ever give a negative connotation that you have to try to run around? I think that's the way I asked it, something along those lines.
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate to what you said. Yeah.
It was not me saying, Fuhrer, huh? Don't you know that's Nazi? It was.
No, Ed tried to answer it, but he kind of bumbled around, and he just wasn't comfortable with, you know, the way the whole thing was presented. Yeah. So, you know, whatever. I mean.
And I talked to him afterwards, so, you know, we'll take it out. You know, because if he just wasn't comfortable with that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't say I would never talk about it on the Fuhrer Fuhrer show, just so on the major release. It was, like I said, it was not an attack on him or the name, and I tried to phrase it so it wasn't that, but I can see how if you're caught off guard by that, you're not used to being, to answering that question, that would be like, is he attacking me?
Yeah, well, he said he's never heard this question before, right? And, you know, he doesn't deal with the public so much, right? He deals with people in the beer biz. People in the beer biz have already been introduced to the wholesaler. Mm-hmm. So that's probably why it was, you know, I mean, I think if you had, you know, Fuhrer Brewing Company, right, there'd be a lot more. Because you're dealing with the general public, there'd be a lot more concern about image. But who knows? I mean, a lot of German immigrants in the area, right?
I mean, Adolphus Busch, right? So, I mean, there's...
Yeah, and a lot of German in the beer names, yeah. So it might just be absorbed without any real, you know, without any rules, you know, as long as they're not, you know, naming their beers Heil Hitler, I mean.
And I'm just sure, which means I think leader, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's a bad, but it's just the weird connotations that could have to somebody, particularly somebody from outside the area, somebody mm-hmm. who's not familiar with the name at all. Maybe like, whoa.
Yeah, but like I said, the general public doesn't deal with the wholesaler. So,
but the general public are the people who are going to be listening to what we put out.
Sure.
So that's why.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I've been familiar with them for so long that, you know, I completely forgot about Fuhrer. And you know, it is always portrayed as Frank Fuhrer.
Yeah.
You saw something handwritten on a chalkboard inside the Flying Dog bus. And that's probably the first time I've ever seen Fuhrer all by itself written, at least written. I mean, I hear people talk about wholesalers as, you know, this is from Fuhrer. But, you know, anytime you see it written down, it's, you know, the side of the truck, it's, you know, Frank Fuhrer and, it's, you know, things like that. So they're.
And that may have been what set me off in that thinking. Mm-hmm. But if it said Frank Fuhrer, I probably would not have even, you know, it probably mm-hmm. would not have crossed me the same way as just having Fuhrer written down.
Yeah.
So right. it was weird, but to compensate, I did put a drawing of a Feynman diagram of electrons scattering on the chalkboard.
I didn't see that, or if it was there, I didn't know what it was. I didn't remember it.
Oh, yes, they had the little. Well, you'll hear about it in the spiel.
Yeah. Yep. So what else? What else? What else?
Well, it's been 2 weeks. I mean, it's been yeah. Must have been a lot of stuff to talk about, right?
Yeah, I guess. tore my lawnmower engine apart and put it back together. That was the first time inside an engine. All the parts that I've learned should be there were there.
Uh-huh.
My dad helped me. My dad had all the tools to get the, you know, cylinder or the piston back in the cylinder and things like that. So that was fun. Thing is, I finished it up today and it ran for about 45 seconds and wouldn't start after that.
Oh.
My dad was playing poker or something, so I have to call him tomorrow and see if he has any ideas. I'm not sure. I'm like, I put it together, I pull the engine, it starts, you know, starting up and it's, you know, puttering. I'm like, it's going to clean up, start running smoothly, and it dies. I'm like, what the heck? So, a little more excitement with that. Small engine repair. Yay! It's a lot of, even for something, you know, just like a lawnmower engine, it's a lot of very fine-tuned interactions, you know? And I was thinking more so about, you know, what happens after the apocalypse? And, like, even you have to, like, there's going to be very few people that can fix broken engines.
Like, very few people could, yeah. Yeah, we talked about this before, the toaster thing, right? Yeah. Now, you know, it takes so much to create such a little thing, but...
But, I mean, even MacGyvering something back together, right, with an engine, because you have to get, you know, the timing on the valves right, and then you got to get the spark from the flywheel right, you know, like, just talking about the small engines, you know, and, like, especially if you just can't order parts from the, you know, the Briggs and Stratton wholesaler. It's like,
I think that after the apocalypse, mowing your lawn is going to be the least of your concerns.
You're going to be turning that into a thing of locomotion is what you're going to be doing.
So, after the apocalypse, I could probably create a solar cell. I wouldn't be able to make something that is very powerful, but I could do it.
How would you create a solar cell? Like,
you get some relatively common materials. You
can make a solar water heater. You can't make solar.
No, for the solar, a solar cell is not that complicated.
Where are you going to get the gallium?
I'm sure it can be retrieved from other sources around.
You're not going to have the internet to know how to make one. So how are you going to make a solar cell? Uh-huh.
I could read up on the process.
Well, you better start now because the apocalypse might happen before you finish reading.
I'll print out some PDFs. And no, I mean,
and then you'll be using it to warm your house and burn them
up. I remember doing something similar in science class. I mean, you know, once you have the chemicals isolated, making a solar cell is not... it's not trivial, but it's not incredibly complicated. But then again, it's not going to be an efficient one. You're not going to get one that can power your computer.
Well, yeah, and if you make one, it's probably going to last for a day or two. And you have to start over.
Right.
Yeah, so those preppers, there's something behind that. I better start getting on that.
Start listening to InfoWars.
Is that what it is?
That the preppers do the InfoWars, or they listen to InfoWars.
Okay. It's going to be difficult to tell what's in there. Here, let me rip it open.
Let me just turn on the flash.
Why don't you just let me rip the can open?
Hold on a minute.
This is great radio. Ripping the can open would be better audio.
Yep, but...
Give me the can.
Yeah, it's hard to see through that.
Rah! Destroy, destroy, destroy! There's a whole bunch of foam at the bottom still.
So I have a story about how being a good person actually worked.
Okay. Don't think there's any yeast in here.
So I'm on the way to... I'm away from an event, and I get myself a little bit lost, and I'm trying to turn around, trying to figure out where the heck I am, and I hear a smack. And I look and I see that my mirror has been knocked off. Apparently it hit another parked car.
No.
And so I look around, and it's nighttime. It's kind of rainy. And I sort of sheepishly sort of leave a post-it note with my number, but I kind of know it's going to get kind of way. If I put it there, I take my thing, and I run off. But I'm hounded by this the entire night. Uh-huh. I'm thinking, oh, I don't think there was much damage on the car, but I don't know. And I looked at my car, and there was some damage. And, but it's going to cost me insurance money. Don't really need to deal with that right now, but... Oh, God, but I really should. So the next day, after sleeping on, I went back. And I said, look, I hit your car. I let them know, but it probably was illegible. Let's exchange information. And so we did. And so my car, if you look at it, still has the problem. But interestingly enough, the guy also has Allstate. And when the claims are all done, since we both have Allstate, it's a cross claim and no one has to pay any deductible. It's completely covered. Hmm. We both have collision. Completely covered.
Huh.
So I'm going to get my car fixed, his car fixed. No extra money. Yeah.
What? So as long as you reckon to someone with Allstate, you don't have to pay for the repair, pay anything for the repairs?
Apparently.
How's that work?
Apparently.
Or did you get... Do they have that accident forgiveness too or something? Is that...
They do have... I guess there is some sort of accident forgiveness thing working. I don't know. I mean, I have a very good record. I don't have any points.
I mean, you did have that wreck last year,
yeah,
right? So you probably don't have accident forgiveness after that. I don't know. I don't have Allstate, but you would think you only get like one of those every 10 years, you know, and you have a claim.
Yeah, well, I don't know how it works, because that was another thing that, like, you know, that was sort of, it was a natural thing that happened. It was not me. Mm-hmm. It was not caused by me. It was just, you know, I hit some things, hydroplaned, and yeah, shit happens.
But this was
less of a shit happens and more of I should have been paying more attention. Uh-huh. So this was more of an accident. And what happened was more of a, you know, what they in the insurance would call an act of God or something. Like if a tree falls on you, on your car, would they take that and call that accident forgiveness? I don't think so. I don't think they would use up your accident forgiveness for that.
Yeah, but going too fast in the rain.
I wasn't going too fast in the rain. I mean, the police were there.
Well, traveling too fast for conditions is very subjective. If you hydroplane, then you're traveling too fast for conditions.
The police opened an investigation, decided I did nothing wrong.
Right. Cool. Maybe there's a problem with standing water on the road. You should sue the state. So your taxes go up.
Right.
but everyone's taxes will go up and you only have to pay part of what you win.
After a whole lot of annoying stuff going on with my health insurance and my unemployment thing, they're finally kicked in. I have 4 interviews next week.
Nice.
2 phone, 2 in person.
Hope they pay out.
Well, it'd be nice if at least one of them does.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, it's crazy, crazy week or two of shit going on. But yeah, just do the right thing, and maybe something great will happen because of it. I did the right thing. That is going to pay at least $500 deductible. Nope, deductible's waived.
Cool. Believe in karma. Maybe you'll get those job interviews. Maybe you get all 4 offers from all 4 jobs, and you get to pick the best one.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Then you might have to start believing in fate and stuff like that.
No, I don't think that would be enough to do it.
If you get all 4 job offers and you have to pick the best one, that's pretty...
That would be pretty amazing, but I don't know if that would be enough to get me...
Believing in karma?
Believing in karma. That's a huge stretch to go from a series of not quite coincidences.
I hear what you're saying. If you get 1 or 2 job offers, right? Screw karma. You get all 4 and they're all good, then you might want to start thinking about karma. I'm just saying. Just saying. Come on, like it's going to happen. I mean, what are the odds of getting 4 great job offers in 1 week? It's. I hope you get it, but...
The odds are poor.
So the odds are poor that you're going to have to start believing in karma. But if it happens...
You'll be the one who's trying to try... If that would happen, then you're going to have to start trying to convince me to believe in karma. And show me other ways in which that is true.
You said all you need is the evidence to show you. That's some good evidence right there.
That's not evidence.
I know.
That's a series of circumstances.
I know. I'm teasing.
No, I know you're teasing, but I want to make... But just in case people... think that there's, you know, even a little bit of sincerity behind what Jeff's saying, which there isn't. But just in case, no, it's a series of, they're not coincidences because I'm going to be influencing each of those interviews, right? I mean, they're interviewing me, and I'm kind of interviewing them in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But whether or not it happens would not be an argument for karma. If that happens, then I also win the lottery, then, without playing, that would be really weird.
Great voice!
Then, you know...
Some drunk gives you a ticket, turns out to be a $1 million ticket.
Yeah, I mean, if things start happening in a really ridiculously awesome way from here on forward, then I would say the option at least needs to be explored. The hypothesis needs to be explored.
So how good would it have to be before you start believing in karma? Here we go. This is more a post show. This might be more fun than the post show.
I don't know. How good would it have to be is an interesting question.
Like none of it's provable. None of it's scientifically provable.
Right.
But what kind of string of good luck, like how big would this string of good luck have to be before you're like, holy shit, there has to be something behind this karma thing.
I don't know if I could put a number on that. I don't know whether me being such a skeptical person, whether something simply happening to me would be enough to prove it, even if a huge array of great things happened to me.
What if, like, you just start shitting horseshoes and nothing bad ever happens to you and everything you do is best case scenario? You go to the bar and you pick up 4 girls, you know? They all come home at the same time.
Because of this? All because of me?
Well,
From this point,
you never have another shitty day, you know? Everything is amazing, and the next day is even more amazing.
You know, if that were to happen, if it were to be a continually situation where just every single day something amazing and awesome and incredible were to happen, and even those days that something incredible didn't happen, nothing terrible happened, nothing depressing happened, nothing... It always worked out towards good. Over a course of time, I bet I could probably be convinced... I don't know how long that period of time is. But over a course of time, I bet I would probably lose my skepticism towards that.
Like, just, I don't know what it is, but it's working.
Just because of, just because I'm human, just because I'm, I am irrational.
Or would you start being Matrix type skeptical? Like, someone's fucking with me here, you know? That might be the way it would go, right? This is just, you either do it two ways. You either, you know, whistle a song and skip down the road and have be happy, or be like, well, what the fuck?
Like, I'm being punked, right? This is...
Exactly. I could see you doing the later. You would just never be happy. You would, like, jump in front of a bus to see what would happen before you'd agree, you know, you'd admit that I have karma, good karma.
It depends on the individual
Save me, Superman.
Yeah. Yeah, if Spider-Man comes in, everybody gets one.
Choking on the water.
Don't choke on the water. It's not meant for you to choke on. I've been playing D&D.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What level are you? There's a levels, I guess, just like in other RPGs?
I started and continue to be at level 7.
You start at level 7?
No, you can start at level 1, but since other people on the who were adventuring were level 7, we started me at level 7.
Nice.
So that makes it a little bit easier to sort of jump in and do more stuff.
So what's your best characteristic?
Well, I'm a mage, so I have magical spells. But the way spells work in D&D is a little bit different than
but like... You have to roll to get your skill level, your initial starting skill levels, right, or something like that?
Yes, and I roll pretty well. So I know like 8 languages. I have very high intelligence and wisdom scores.
Good thing you brought all those weighted dice, huh?
And my charisma is not that bad. My stamina is not good, but I'm a mage. I'm not supposed to be. So how mages work is a little bit different than video games. Video games, you cast spell. In D&D, you learn, you have a spell book, and you can learn a certain number of spells for each level. Like, I'm level 7, so I can learn up to, I can learn like 5 level 1 spells and 3 level 2 spells and 2 level 3 spells and 1 level 4 spell per day, per 8-hour period. And if you learn them, you can put them in your head, but once you cast that spell, it's out of your head until you have another 8-hour period to refresh and put more stuff into your head. So...
Need those mitochondrians to charge up.
The idea behind it, according to the player's guide,
whatever it
is that these are sort of arcane things that you have to put into your head, kind of like a matrix, and as soon as you use it, you've used up that thing, and so you have to recharge yourself. It's like a battery.
So you say an 8-hour period, 8 hours of playing, or...
8-hour period decided by the DM, you know, but 8 hours pass in the... In the game world.
I see.
So if you're on a time quest, well, that 8 hours really matters. You can't obviously just rest in the middle of a battle or in the middle of doing something.
I'm going to take a nap, guys. Yeah. I'll be back in 7 hours and 45 minutes when I have some more spells.
Or if you get locked up and, shit happens sometimes, but that's fun. It's been fun. Next week, I believe Nick, who is a DM, will be joining us in the show. He also went to the Real Alphast. He can give you an idea about what went on there from his perspective. From the perspective of somebody who doesn't go these things that often. So maybe he would have more of an interesting perspective on it.
Okay. Cool.
Let's see.
Let's see. I guess I finished up The Wire since we last.
Yeah, that's true. You were tweeting me some things or emailing me some things.
Yeah, it was sad when Omar bit it.
Well, such is.
I for the longest time I figured he was going to get capped. You know, being the guy who jacked the guy that ripped off the drug dealers. I can't believe he made it as long as he did. But you know, the writers had fun with how they offed him. And, I'm over now. I did have some of The Wire withdrawal, though. I was like, oh, I'm not going to get to see the exploits of all the different characters. But just the way things are, you know, there's been other shows where I felt the same way. Like, that's it. Not going to be able to explore that anymore.
Yeah, it's going to happen soon with Breaking Bad.
Yep. Yeah. Lost. Don't forget about Lost.
Lost, yeah. That was sad when that was over.
Yep.
Yeah, I would recommend getting into Game of Thrones. That would be my pick for your next thing.
Yeah, I got some Game of Thrones. I got some Mad Men. I'm not sure if I want to get into Mad Men or not. So.
I don't know if you'd really enjoy Mad Men. Mad Men is...
Downton Abbey, should I...
No, you should not do Downton Abbey. Downtown Abbey. You should not do Downton Abbey. I don't know if you'd like Mad Men.
Okay.
It doesn't have the sort of characteristics of a show that you would like, nor is it a show that I could say is fundamentally you just have to watch it like The Wire was.
Okay.
You know, like The Wire was, you have to watch this show. You'll know why when you watch it, why you have to watch this show. Right. Mad Men, if you're interested in the aesthetics of the era, if you're interested in some sort of unique kind of storytelling and a much slower pace of a show, then, you know, it's really sort of about immersing yourself in that kind of, in that world that they put up. It's a good show, and there's good acting, and there's good development, and there's lots of stuff going on, but it's not a must-see show.
Gotcha. It's no Two and a Half Men.
Right. It's no Two Broke Girls.
There's such shit on TV.
I've been really surprising myself by how much I've been enjoying Elementary, which is the CBS Sherlock.
Okay. It's good?
It's actually way better than it has any right to be.
Okay.
I would definitely recommend
it. Is it definitely inspired or modeled after Sherlock? Like how they do that? Or
no.
No, it's different?
It's different. They take a different tact.
Okay.
And
I guess they're just saying, hey, Sherlock's popular, let's do another Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Sherlock Holmes has been popular for, I mean, House was Sherlock Holmes.
Sure, right. But, I mean, this is, I don't know, I only saw a tiny bit of Elementary. But it just certainly seems like some producers somewhere are saying, hey, let's, BBC's got a hit, let's bring this back. Let's reboot it again.
And that may be the case, that may be what happened. Or that may have been, you know, how it started.
Mm-hmm.
But they've taken a unique sort of take on the character.
Okay.
And the other characters around them. So it doesn't feel like, yeah, it doesn't feel like BBC Sherlock's kid brother. It feels like its own show in its own right.
That's cool. All right, I might check that out. I'm looking forward to seeing more Sherlock, though. That I really like those six whole episodes.
Yeah.
Two seasons, six episodes. That's how those Brits do it. What else? It's hockey playoff season.
Yes.
Yes, Greg's favorite time of year. It's like Christmas every
day.
Well,
you know, now that we have everything done, codified, that we're doing things on Saturday,
yep.
It's not that big of a deal. Because I don't have to be like, today?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to cancel you for a hockey game on a Saturday. You don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
At least not yet. Maybe like beginning of June, you might miss a Saturday.
Well, there is the beginning of June. I mean, the first week of June
is
the wedding. So
that. Right. And then Sabres after that, right?
And then Sabres the week after that. So, yeah.
That's a long ways off. That's you know, three whole playoff series before I might. What's up, Allie? What are you doing up?
I just hi, Uncle Greg.
Hi, Allie. You need to get to sleep now.
Does Mommy know you're up?
Yeah.
Okay. Close the door. Or that's okay. You can leave it open. I'll close it later. Good night, Allie.
Good night. Good night.
Oh, thank you. There's kids looking at me.
Huh.
She doing pretty good soccer. I mean, she's still 5-year-old league doing 5-year-old things, mm-hmm. but she likes it, so that's cool. We've also been playing baseball. like kept playing catch. And she only catches one out of every five or six, you know, throws.
She'll learn.
She got hit in the face with a ball yesterday. Oof. It's a soft baseball. Like, you know, I don't know, I guess T-ball type one. Yeah. It's kind of squishy. But the other day she was doing really good at, like, getting the glove there and just, like, having not letting the ball hit her body. And, yeah, just yesterday, boom, hit her right here, right, like, beside her nose on her cheek.
Did she?
She kept playing after, well, she took, like, 5 minutes of crying and calming down. But after that, she kept playing. So I figure, you know, anything to, you know, hand-eye coordination, why not?
And she's throwing well? Does she?
She wasn't yesterday. A couple of days ago, she was throwing pretty good. Yesterday, she was holding on too long, throwing it at the ground a lot.
But one thing, I don't watch a lot of commercials, obviously, but I was over at a friend's place waiting for D&D to start, and they don't have a DVR or anything, and so I saw a commercial or two. And one of them, I guess, was it was a play on it, a play on that where a father and a son had catch, but they both were throwing like girls, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing was pass something better on to your kids, and maybe in a car, I don't know, whatever it was, but... I don't see a lot of throwing like girls anymore, even from... I think people know how to throw now.
Yeah.
It's not really a...
I still see some girl throwing around. I don't know. I don't think... Well, we'll see. I don't think Allie throws too much like a girl. She still needs a little more practice, but I think, you know, more practice...
Yeah.
You know,
well, especially... it's the elbow in front and
yeah,
like that, as opposed to elbow back... Mm-hmm. And then okay, twist around. So
right. Maybe I throw like a girl. Who knows? No, I guess
no. The throwing a girl is you throw your elbow in front and then you pivot.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. Okay.
Whereas throwing like a throwing, as you would like a baseball, you put your elbow behind your arm, and then you use your body as your pivot point.
I see. I don't know. I probably don't throw that great. I can't, like, thinking back to high school, like, I could, when we were playing dodgeball, murder ball, I could never throw the ball hard. You know, some of the kids could, phew, you know, the thing would whiz, and I never knew how to throw it hard, so maybe I was throwing like a girl then, who knows. Definitely wasn't getting the body behind it or something.
Well, I mean, like pitchers use their legs. Mm-hmm. You're throwing back and you're leaning back and you're using your legs to power you through the motion.
Right.
So your legs are your fulcrum.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, she likes playing catch. She actually likes playing that more than like practicing soccer. So I don't know. If she can learn to catch a baseball at 5-6 years old. Just good for hand-eye coordination, I'm sure. Sure. It'll pay out in a lot of different ways going forward. So, you want to go drink some beer?
Yes, let's do that. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about in the post-show.